T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Steve Stoke.
When I started out, and Harry was my partner, he said to me, "You will find your identity." It turned out that I felt that my identity was going to be to teach as many people as I could the game of baseball.
White Sox TV analyst.
Being an analytics guy, I would have known that a sub-6-foot-tall right-handed starting pitcher in the major leagues, the odds were infinitesimal. But if there was a contest that had a winner, I could never understand why it shouldn't be me.
Social media god.
A lot of people love you, especially the people you haven't blocked.
I've been blocking more than Tom Brady's line.
Steve Stoke with Bernstein and Holmes on The Score.
Gee, I wonder if Steve Stone has any thoughts on the White Sox today.
I don't know. Maybe we should find out.
We should probably ask him.
We probably should. Steve Stone is on Twitter at Steve Stone, and he is on the Bernstein and Holmes show on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. It was lovely to see you last night, Steve, and shake your hand once again. And everything about last night was a delight, except for the outcome of that game. And I saw one baseball team that impressed me a whole hell of a lot more than the other one.
Well, first of all, let's do a little housekeeping first. Congratulations on the new show. They have paired two giants. It's almost like Martin and Lewis getting together. Oh, wait, they got together. Anyway, I saw you last night, Dan. You look terrific. You're 64 years old today. Happy birthday. Congratulations. I got to tell you something.
Thanks so
you just
much.
Keep eating those lamb chops, and you're going to be top of the line into your 90s.
Good recommendation. I probably wouldn't have doubled back, but yes, the mustard crusted lamb chops were well turned.
Stoney knows where all the good food is. What did the final count of the t-shirts end up being, Stoney?
Well, look, and you know, I've mentioned this many times. It was not really a contest. It was one of those situations where everybody wins. You
yes.
get some wonderful-looking T-shirts. White Sox Charities got a great deal of money. I mean, a surprising amount of money for people who showed their generosity. All that money goes to helping the community, which is something great. And, you know, it's one of those things where it really isn't a competition per se. It's one of those things where you both pitch in. You try to sell whatever you can. At the end of the day, the winners are the fans and the people who benefit from White Sox Charities. And I think, pending a recount, Jason won.
All right, look, one more silly question before we get to the real stuff.
Sure.
How many hot dogs were in the duffel bag, and how many did Jason eat?
Well, I believe when looking at that bag, to my untrained eye for volume of hot dogs, I'm thinking in the neighborhood of 40 to 50, which gives you an idea how nice those duffel bags were and how many hot dogs fit in there. Jason, because the game was particularly long, I think minimum he had was 5. And I think the only thing that kept him from eating more was that there was so much going on in that game, so many twists and turns, so many teams, you know, scoring, going ahead, only to fall behind, to go ahead, to fall behind. I think that limited his intake. But I think left to his own devices, he could have probably eaten most of that bag.
Okay, so now let's talk about last night and some of the things that were going on in last night's game. Dan and I were having a discussion earlier. And maybe we're wrong on this, but we had felt like if you have a player that doesn't play a position that often, especially center field, the default setting for that player would be play him deep, not play him shallow. We were struggling to figure out why the outfield defense was aligned the way that it was. What did you think about it?
Well, I think every one of these outfielders has a card. You know, this is the day and age of analytics in the game, and they figure out via the power of a guy and his propensity to the direction he's going to hit it and pretty much how far he hits it. They show you exactly how many steps you should play back, how many steps you should play to the left or right, depending on who's hitting. And so there's that aspect of it. And you're right. Look, to sit and blame this on Leury is not correct, simply because he isn't an everyday center fielder. He can play center field. He's just not one of those guys you see out there every day. He's not Adam Engel, who's injured. He's not Luis Robert, who has sore legs. He's not anybody else, but he is Leury, who fills a lot of gaps. That being said, you've got a manager and you've got, I don't know, you've got a lot of coaches sitting in that dugout. And when they look up and they see that Leury is not as deep as the guy on the right of him and the guy on the left of him, and you know the heart of the order is coming up. They've got three guys with double figures in home runs, and they all hit back to back to back. You got to figure that Mountcastle and Hayes and Santander, these guys can hit the ball a long way or they wouldn't have double figures in home runs, especially since Baltimore has moved the fences back some 26 feet. Leury was playing too shallow. It was plain and simple. And you're right. If you have a guy that's not experienced, most guys can come in much easier than they can go back. That being said, if you play back, maybe you give up singles. You just don't give up doubles and triples. And so I think that on further review, they will see that there were some mistakes made last night and understand that this team has its challenges. We know the physical aspect of what's been going on with the White Sox this year. And so when you look at everything involved and you're not to your full complement of manpower, you're going to have to do things a little bit better. This defense only has two teams in the league worse than they are, which means, and both of those teams, by the way, are completely out of the races. The Sox are not. They're 4.5 games back. They're sitting right now as we speak still with a fine shot, and we've got a lot of Guardians and a lot of Twins coming up. And the Guardians have Boston coming up and New York coming up, and they play the Twins also. So there's still plenty of time. There's still plenty of room. But you can't make mistakes. Physical mistakes are going to happen. You can't allow mental mistakes to get you beat in the ballgame. And we've seen it with Tim coming back. Quite obviously, he is much less than 100%. But he's good enough to come back and help this team offensively. The footwork isn't great because I don't think he quite trusts the strain growing yet. And you saw him come off the bag at first base. The end result is he did get picked off first base twice. And one of the things that these coaches do, besides waving in runners on occasion or taking their gear when they get to first base, as soon as that first baseman moves with runners on first and second, you have got to shout your lungs out for the guy to get back to the bag. I don't know because we didn't replay if there was that message conveyed to Tim on the second time, but as soon as Guerrero even twitches toward the bag, first base coach has to be screaming, get back. Tim was out by a good deal in that play. And those little things will eventually cost you games, especially when you're not going to pound the opposition because your offense is depleted.
You mentioned Tim Anderson and how he's playing at less than 100%. I'm going to give you a list here of names that we went through, sort of compiled earlier in the show, in no particular order. Anderson, Jimenez, Robert, Vaughn, Abreu, Grandal, Moncada, Engel. I may be missing some.
Did you do Robert Vaughn on purpose?
No, I didn't, but nice catch. That is a list of White Sox players who at one point or another, if not now, then at another time, have been active, playing, but yet told that it's okay to not be 100% and or necessarily go 100% at something. Because of soreness, because of returning from an injury, because of risk of injury, where essentially they have been allowed to play at less than full speed because that's what the team needs of them. Where are you with the idea of doing that, first of all, and then this many players having that kind of special dispensation?
Well, certainly there's a lot, and that's a question of, I think, a lot of bad luck. That's part of it. I think one of the things that you realize is because of a 162 nature of baseball, you're going to have to be out there sometimes on a daily basis, playing through some injuries, getting nicked up. You have to understand as a player what you can play through and what you can't, when you are risking further injury and when it's just soreness. There's some guys that have a higher pain tolerance than others. There's some guys who don't have a history of injury. There's a lot of guys who play through whatever it is they have to play through. And, of course, on the White Sox, the poster boy for that is Jose Abreu. As you know, the hip is bad, and yet he got two hits last night. He's still helping the ball club doing what he's doing. He's been forced to DH because they want to take some of the pressure off that hip. But that's one guy at one end of the spectrum. Then you have some other guys at the other end of the spectrum. And one of the things that you have to kind of figure out is that when you're putting together your baseball team, you have to figure out maybe by the history of the guy, does he have a history of missing substantial amounts of time? If that's the case, sometimes it forces you to do something that you wouldn't ordinarily do. That's how trades are made. That's how certain things are considered when you're putting together a baseball team. We seem to have an inordinate amount of guys who do have some leg issues for whatever reason. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm sure that there's a breakdown of exactly why this guy is not 100% most of the time. I think we see some teams that have players that go out there and play quite a bit. Whit Merrifield comes to mind for Kansas City. I really never seen him dogging it. He is a guy who steals bases. He plays the outfield. He plays the infield. And he plays every day. That's one type of player. You have other players who they get nicked up and suddenly they're not playing quite as well. I do know one thing, and this is a byproduct of the way baseball is, and we can't indict baseball because of that, but it is a fact. As multi-year contracts, especially multi-year big money contracts, have come to be the norm in baseball, as opposed to the one-year contracts that we all used to play on. I had one multi-year contract my entire career. That was the last one I signed. When you're on a one-year contract, you have a tendency to play through a lot of injuries and play a little bit harder, perhaps, because you know what you're going to make next year is directly dependent on what you're making this year. We also didn't have agents, and I can't blame it all on them, but agents will tell certain players, you know what, if you're nicked up, go on the IL for a couple of days. Don't play hurt because you're in the, you know, the second year of a five-year, whatever the case may be. Sometimes you're in the last year of a five-year. Those guys have a tendency to play a little bit better, and maybe the poster boy for that was Daryl Strawberry. You take a look at his option years, and you realize they're magnificent. Why? Because he was going to be a free agent. He got paid a great deal of money if he had a great year. So that incentive, that financial incentive, is something that we see in baseball quite a bit. But when you take that financial incentive away, when you give a guy a long-term deal for a lot of money, you got to be sure that the guy you're giving that to is going to still give you everything he has on a daily basis. And I look back at Andre Dawson, who got a big contract. He left it all on the field every day. Look at Ryan Sandberg, got a big contract. Didn't have to worry about him hustling because he did all the time. But you have to know, and maybe there's some different players now, but you have to know which guys you can give that long-term deal that gives them financial security, and they will still have that intestinal fortitude, that pride, whatever it takes to get out there every day and give you everything they got.
Danny Mendick is lost for the season with an ACL tear, which is terrible. I mean, he's been doing so well in the stead of Tim Anderson. He said that there was miscommunication on that play. There's been a ton of that, Stoney. Like, the last two seasons, there's been a ton of that when it comes to outfielders and infielders, outfielders and outfielders with the White Sox. How do you go about fixing that inside of a season? Is it something that can be done?
Well, I think, first of all, there are certain plays that are easier for an outfielder, and you have to explain to them that communication is the key to avoid nasty injuries. You're not going to ever completely avoid them because we do see them a lot around baseball. We just don't see them quite as frequently as we see it with the White Sox. And somebody has to yell for the ball. And that one was kind of in the middle of no man's land, but there was another factor there. That is, Hazley and Mendick didn't play on the same side of the infield and outfield. I don't know if they ever played the same side. So it's two guys unfamiliar with one another. Normally, on that ball, the outfielder just yells and yells, says, I got it. If he catches it, that's fine. But you avoid a major injury that takes a guy who is very productive and takes him out of the lineup for the remainder of the season. That was very costly. And there have been a lot of these that are very costly. And unfortunately, we see a lot of guys run into one another. I mean, Eloy in left field routinely ran into Luis Robert. My feeling is you lock Eloy in one of those booths that you test hearing, and you have a recording of Luis Robert's voice. And Eloy gets very familiar with the way Luis Robert sounds. And when he hears, I got it, he doesn't run into him. That's not good. And so we've seen a lot of that. You see a lot of infielders, a lot of outfielders colliding.
You actually pointed it out a couple of weeks ago where Josh Harrison had done it the right way, where he heard the outfielder, I forget who it was, but it may have been Vaughn, and he veered off. Not only did he stop, he veered off so they wouldn't be in the path of the outfielder.
Well, he did it twice. The first time he actually ran so very close to Vaughn that it was almost disturbing, but Andrew was able to make the catch. The second time he did, he veered off. And again, it's guys getting familiar with one another. That infielder, that shortstop or second baseman, getting very familiar with the voices of his outfielders. And because of the noise of the crowd, the outfielder literally has to scream. And he screams, I got it. Then the other guy gives way. And, you know, whether the guy catches it or not, they both live to fight another day. They're not lost for the season.
I want to get back to the point that you made about the self-motivation of players, whether on long-term contracts or not. And, Steve, I've learned over the years it's hard to criticize on-field effort that you see in baseball, because it's not that kind of game. It's not a game you can play harder. And sometimes the guys who look like they're grinding out there are, it's what they call eyewash in baseball. And this is your Adam Eatons and your Nick Swishers and any other guys you want to add to this list. What I want to know, do you think the White Sox, I don't want to say are playing hard enough, do you think they're working hard enough?
Yeah, I mean, you see them out there every day. You see the guys playing as hard as they can on a nightly basis. I mean, look, when you see what this team has done in, I don't know, take the last 2 weeks, and you'll see that this team has come back in games that sometimes you believe they should be left for dead. But they never really quit in the course of the game. And there's certainly... It certainly shows you as a team the character of these guys, because they're not going to lay down. Doesn't matter how many runs they're down. They keep on coming back. They find a way to get the tying run to the plate in the late innings, and that part of it is good. However, if you've made a couple of egregious mistakes along the way that puts you in that position consistently, no team, except for the Yankees perhaps, can come back consistently and win. The Yankees actually have a winning record in games where they've trailed. It's almost remarkable. But you take a look at a team that is playing 743 baseball. They're playing so far and away better than anybody else in the American League that it's not even close. And Houston is a very good team, but the Yankees were able to come back on them in what a lot of people think is the preview for the American League Championship. I mean, those are two very good teams. Right now, the Yankees stand out. Right now, they've had their injuries. They haven't had that many major injuries, especially to their productive players. They're scoring a whole lot of runs, and they're doing a lot of things right. The pitching has been magnificent. They actually field the ball, and that's something the Sox have had a problem with over the last few years. It has not been a good defensive team, and that's one of those things. I mean, if you bring back essentially the same players that have not been good defensively, it's hard to assume they're suddenly going to get good. So then you have to try to get to the point where you outscore the opposition. And we find out in the weather of Chicago the first 6 weeks of the season, there's certain guys that just don't produce quite as well as other guys. This weather is abominable to play in. We have wind chill factors sometimes into the beginning of June. It's been a most amazing year, but the team doesn't produce early like they produce when it gets warm. Right now they're scoring a whole lot of runs, and sometimes they're actually able to overcome their mistakes, both mental and physical. But this team is making far too many mistakes. I still believe they can win the division. I take a look at Minnesota. I think eventually the pitching does them in. I take a look at the Guardians, and to me, when I look at their pitching philosophy and the guys they put out year after year, I look at their front office when I understand that some of those Cleveland front office people went to Minnesota. Some of those Cleveland front office people went to Toronto. both of those teams are very good teams. Cleveland seems to be able to do it. Sometimes they do it really well. They have a guy who manages exceptionally well in Terry Francona. They have a front office who seems to be able to choose guys who develop into pretty good pitchers. And they make contact, they run the bases, they catch the baseball. And so right now, are they overwhelming? No, they're not. But they've won 8 of their last 10. They're sitting there tied for first place. It's a team that I don't think is going to go away, because I think the fundamentals that they do on a daily basis will keep them competitive, certainly. And right now they're a plus 36 in run differential, which to a certain extent I think is a bit overblown as far as how a team is going to do. But that team is just that. It's a team, and year after year, and I don't think it's a coincidence, because they understand pretty much how to play the game, they usually wind up at or near the top of the division.
I want to fix Lucas Giolito. And I'm looking at his numbers. And the last game, the fastball averaged 92.3 miles per hour. He maxed out at 94. And over the last month, that's been about where he's been. He's losing velocity. I know that you were concerned with pitchers, all pitchers, that at some point that dead arm period was going to happen because of how they ramped up into the spring training, the abbreviated spring training. Is there something that's not happening mechanically? Like, is his leg drive good? Like, what do you see when you're seeing him struggle to find that velocity that makes his changeup a much more dangerous pitch?
Well, what I see is I see a guy who's not hitting his spots. And I also see a guy, and the league is, you know, where we always talk about pitchers adjusting to hitters. You know, a guy comes up, it's like Suzuki with the Cubs. He came up, he tore the league apart. Then all of a sudden they said, well, you know, he's seen a lot of off-speed pitches in Japan. Let's see if he can hit this inside fastball up under his hands. The answer was he couldn't. Now he's gotten hurt. He's going to come back. I think he's going to be a good hitter. But the league adjusted to him. We don't talk near as much about the hitters adjusting to pitchers. Lucas uses a lot of changeups. And sometimes the smarter hitters, the guys that come up in situations where they can really hurt you, sometimes they're sitting there looking for that specific pitch. In the case of Lucas, he throws a lot of changeups. So when he does throw a changeup, it's got to be a real good changeup each and every time. Bichette came up with the bases loaded, got a changeup, did not move his hands, did not move his feet, was right on it, hit it out of the ballpark. And this is a guy that went up, in my estimation, obviously looking for an off-speed pitch. We've seen that a lot with Lucas. Sometimes you just have a brain cramp. Alejandro Kirk was hitting everything in sight, line drives all over the ballpark. Lucas goes to 3-0 on him and grooves a fastball at 92 right at his knees, and he hits it out of the park. You got to believe that Kirk is going to be swinging 3-0, and you have to adjust accordingly. You can't throw a get-me-over fastball. Now, maybe Lucas was trying to throw that low and away on the black. I don't know. But you can't afford to make mistakes in that situation. Johnny Cueto has been magnificent this year. And so he's in a situation where he's got Adley Rutschman up. Not a home run hitter. He hit one in his career. But he pitched to him knowing that the three guys up behind him all were hitting either below 200 or right at 200. Rutschman hits a two-run homer. Sox are down two. He gets the next three guys out relatively easily. He made a mental mistake throwing to a one guy. You know, this guy was the first pick in the country. He can really play. The fact that he hasn't really burst out yet, it doesn't really mean he can't and he's not capable of it. And he hit a two-run homer. Johnny's a veteran. He probably would want to rethink that. Now, maybe he threw the right pitch. He threw a cutter or a slider, couldn't get it in. He hit it out of the park. But the point is, maybe pitch this guy carefully. Make sure you throw him something out of the strike zone. He still is a young hitter. And take advantage of the three guys behind him who really can't hit at all. And that really wasn't the case. So again, a little mental mistake by a guy who's been around forever cost you two runs, and as we know, the Sox were never able to come back from that one, although they had their chances. And it was magnificent outfield defense by the Orioles. We saw guys positioned particularly well. I mean, Mullins went and got two balls in right center field that were magnificent. Santander got one in left field, great play. But Hayes had the play of the night, and he goes over into foul territory, and he makes a spectacular play on a ball that would have been a two-base hit. Then he throws out Sheets at the plate. You got a guy with truly an above-average arm, and you got a runner with truly below-average speed. It all set up for the fact that if he makes a decent throw, he's going to be out. And he was out from here to Gary, Indiana.
Yeah, Lawrence and I were debating that earlier. In real time, considering who's coming up later, the desperation of this team right now is informing some of these sends, and it's changing the math for me because I keep thinking, like, what are the chances the White Sox are going to string together enough positive outcomes that maybe you're better off just hoping the catcher drops the throw at some point? I don't like where they are on the risk curve now in some of these decisions, because I just feel like, you know, what the hell? When else are they going to score?
Well, look, I mean, that's a valid point, and I'm sure that all goes into the equation. Joe McEwing is a very prepared guy. He knows how everybody throws in the outfield. He knows how every one of our runners run, and he's decided to send them, and I think depending on who you care to listen to, is either the 13th or the 14th guy he's had thrown out at the plate. But he's been very aggressive this year. He's taking some opportunities. And when the team isn't hitting the ball out of the ballpark, and the reason why the Sox are where they are at home, which is 15 and 19, is that they're being out-homered at home. You cannot allow yourself to be out-homered in your home ballpark if you have a ballpark that's conducive to home runs. Unfortunately, some of our home run hitters are either not playing or not producing. We don't have one guy in double figures in home runs. Granted, the injury to Aloy was really costly. He was going to hit some home runs. Grandal, the second half of last year, certainly hit a lot of home runs. Moncada is capable of hitting home runs, and there's not any of them that are right now able to play. So maybe when they come back, maybe the Sox can take advantage of a ballpark tailored for offense when they don't seem to have a whole lot of it as far as home runs are concerned.
Stoney, as always, we thank you so much for the information. I am looking forward to looking good and resplendent in the color of royalty, in purple. When I get my Steve Stone T-shirt, I will wear it loudly and proudly.
Well, Lawrence, we applaud you. Once again, you know, it wasn't a contest. We applaud you for just going at it, you know, and giving to a worthy cause.
Yes.
And, you know, we don't really care about competition. I mean, you know, that's usually what the losers say and the winners say shut up and deal. So that's kind of the deal. Dan, have a happy birthday. And guys, have a great show. I know it's a great pairing.
Thank you, Steve. That is Steve Stone. He will be a part of this show indeed.
I got both shirts. So I said, is that a cop-out? Because, I mean, look, you know, Stoney, I talk with him at least once a week. I love Stoney. And Jason is of the score and of HF. So how could I not buy the Jason Benetti shirt? So I just bought them both.
It depends on the mood you're in. Some days you're in a Stoney mood. Some days you're in a Jason Benetti mood. You know how it is. Ride the vibe.
There were 40 hot dogs in that bag, Dan.
Yeah, he must have eaten, what, conservatively?
Well,
8 or 9?
Stoney said 5, and I think he's probably being polite. There was also a churro in there, too. But I love that Benetti is comfortable enough to be like, I don't care, I'm on TV, I'm going to eat this.
When we come back, I've got a little note about the opposing pitcher in the White Sox game last night that is interesting. Little things that I did not know that I kind of thought were cool. And I've got an idea of a stat that needs to be updated, or we need a new stat.
I'm down.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
Go White Sox.
So that pitcher you saw last night, pretty good. Dean Kramer, wasn't he? The Orioles ran out there.
I enjoyed that he was very apologetic after he hit Josh Harrison. He felt so bad.
Well, Dean Kramer, well, and he's rocking a cool stash and like the mullet thing he's got going on. It's kind of a, like an early 80s vibe. I did not know that Dean Kramer is the first Israeli ever drafted by an MLB team.
That's pretty crazy.
Let alone to reach the major leagues. I had no idea. He apparently was bar mitzvahed in Israel. He lives in Israel for 2 months of every year, has dual citizenship. His parents are Israeli, and they completed their service in the defense forces.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Does he have to serve since he's got dual citizenship?
Sometimes yes, and sometimes no. I don't think it's compulsory.
Okay.
I don't think so.
It's not like what South Korea, because like they're now with some of the K-pop bands, like
right.
they're asking those guys to serve.
Oh yeah,
come over here.
Yeah, it says he's
some stuff.
He's fluent in Hebrew. The family speaks Hebrew at home. I had no idea, so I just thought that was really that was kind of cool.
Put that in the Rolodex for Monday
for Cody.
Yeah, for when we talk with Cody Decker.
Yeah, he was supposed to be today, but he is busy doing making some charitable efforts, which is obviously more important than just talking to us about baseball. So we're glad he is doing that. Here's this: a quality start.
Okay,
in MLB.
Here we go.
A quality start for a long time has been deemed 6 or more innings pitched, 3 or fewer earned runs.
Correct.
Okay? And it has approximately a 70% correlation with your team winning. It's around the same correlation as hitting a 3-run homer, which gives you about a 70% likelihood of winning the game once you hit it. And I don't know if that's still the same. It's what it always was. I think we need to pare that back a little bit. My proposal is either we have the quality enough start.
The QE?
The QES of 5 or more innings pitched with 3 or fewer.
You want to give this to Johnny Cueto from last night?
Yes, but that's what sort of sparked it in my head. Cueto has had 8 starts. He has had 7 quality enough starts.
He's been very good.
And he's had 5 quality starts.
That's right. And what, 3 scoreless ones?
He's had 1 bad one. One. Only the game against the Cubs, where it was 6 2/3 and 5 earned runs. Everything else, 6 innings, 0 earned. 6 innings, 0 earned. 6 and 3, 6 and 3, 5 and 3, 7 and 0, 5 1/3, and 3 last night. I would love for one of our more statistically fluent folks, whether it's Scott,
Paging Scott from Davenport,
or Chris Camp or somebody else, I would love to see what the new correlation is, what it is in the last, say, 3 years or 4 years.
With quality starts?
And quality enough starts.
Okay.
And I'd love to see what 5 and 3, what that correlates to. Just the value of that. And I don't want to hear, 5 and dive, and we got to train these guys to go along. Whatever it is, whatever your belief is, I'm just dealing with the realpolitik here. I'm dealing with what we see and what feels like. I see you go 5 and three or fewer, I think you gave me a pretty good damn chance to win, and I'm pretty pleased with the job you did. Now, that doesn't go for a guy I'm paying, you know, $300 million, but I'm just thinking, in general, that's good.
Might we have to move the fences back on this because of how pitchers are being used overall?
Yes, the expectations are different. The expectation for what constitutes quality, statistical quality. So that's kind of what I'm saying, that we just got to recalibrate our definition of quality.
I do think that this goes back to a conversation that we were having earlier this week, and it was about how baseball has, if one wants to say, has babied players, and we are still at this place where guys' arms don't work, that you taking the workload off of them hasn't led to there being more healthy pitchers for longer. But at least it seems, without knowing the actual data.
That's a piece of it. It isn't just that. It is also a much greater understanding of leverage and timing within a game. It's a much greater understanding of, and with everybody except Tony La Russa and Mike Matheny and some of the, who still think seventh inning guy and eighth inning guy and ninth inning guy, because that's when the game matters. No, the game decides when those moments matter. And sometimes that means the pitcher who started the game has to come out, because at the third time through the order in the bottom of the fourth is when you need a high leverage arm to come in and get that out. That's not the pitcher's fault necessarily. That's just a better understanding of how little power teams have over the moments that decide baseball games.
Speaking of like seventh, eighth, ninth inning guys, Kendall Graveman has talked a little bit about being a winner and what it takes to win. Why don't we take a break? And it goes to our bigger White Sox conversation. We will share that with you, and we'll keep talking baseball overall and the White Sox specifically. Next, Bernstein and Holmes here on The Score.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter. Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. The Score. And 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
On 1-2.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, you got to think outside the box when it comes to finding ways to make your team less likely to win games or something. Bernstein and Holmes, 10 to 2, Monday through Friday on Sports Radio 670 The Score. We've been very baseball-y. I got some people reacting to my idea for a quality enough start.
A lot of people hate it, Dan.
You can. The 312 says, you want a reward, an ERA, well over 5.5? Interesting, but stupid. Now, that's going out of your way to not understand the point. The point is, a pitcher who does that is putting your team, is giving you a reasonable opportunity to win that game. And once you get the correlation numbers, I think you'll see it.
Whenever I bring up the stat of the actual quality start, be like, well, that's an ERA of 4.5.
Forget the ERA.
Like, forget that. And I, my retort is usually, and you know, today clearly I proved that I was bad at math, but if you have a pitcher who does give you 6 innings in 32 starts, you know what you have? You have a starter that gave you 192 innings.
Which is insane.
Yes. And if their ERA at the end of it is 4.5, so be it. That would be, that's a guy that's going to make $20 million per if he can duplicate that a couple of times. It's fine. I think it's very different from just I want to know if anyone around baseball, like, has any team started to really study the physical impact of the last three seasons. Like, what are the conversations that are happening at 35th and Shields? What are the conversations that are happening at Waveland and Clark when it comes to, do we know anything about how to keep guys healthy and get them healthy? And will we not know anything for another 3 years or so?
And would it be in the best interests of MLB, rather than have some of that information siloed with team by team, have a summit meeting?
Here's what we found out.
Look at, share the info. That's in the best interest of everybody. Baseball, the players' union, get a set of best practices, and whatever team is the best at avoiding injuries, figure out what they're doing. I know there's a competitive advantage there, but it's in everybody's best interest that the best players stay healthy.
And if you were wondering, before Mendick got hurt, the White Sox were 11th in baseball when we're talking about missing games, like guys missing games. And it feels like the sky is falling because this is what we cover. But it is happening around the league, which is why I am a little bit more reluctant to allow them that out. And I get that some of their issues are consequences of lesser players having to play because better players are hurt. But the point that you brought up, the work, and I'm not sure Stoney like was 100% with you on the question, but you weren't talking about even necessarily in game.
Right.
You're talking about all the stuff that goes into it beyond that. And that's where we can get to this Kendall Graveman cut, where he was talking about, here's the word, the culture of winning.
One of the reasons why they are good is because they talk baseball all the time. After a win or loss, they're always communicating about the game that was previously played. After a game, they're always communicating on the plane, in the hotel. They're talking about the next day starter amongst their hitters, and that's why it's one of the best lineups. And like I said, that's what I'm trying to create over here with our pitching staff. And that culture goes a long way. Those guys lived and breathed, and they just wanted to play ball, and they wanted to win. And we had Paul Konerko come and talk to us in spring training, which was an honor to listen to him. But he even brought up in his that when two teams are equally talented, a lot of times it comes down to how well the other team has prepared. And so those moments come up, and you have a better understanding of what might be going on in the baseball game. And I think that the reason Houston has been in the World Series three out of the last 5 years is because of that reason right there. Yes, they're talented. Yes, they have good baseball players. But they have a different knowledge of the game most of the time when we go out. When I was there, when we would go out and play other teams. And I didn't realize that playing against them. But being in the locker room, I started to understand. And a lot of it's led by Maldi, the catcher. And a lot of it's led by Correa. Bregy lives and eats and breathes baseball. McCullers, Brantley, like the list goes on. And I think that's when you have dominant teams, when you get that culture created.
That was Kendall Graveman on Parkins and Spiegel.
In May.
Now, this is going to sound weird because I want to bring something back that kind of makes us all vomit a little bit. Who else said that about the White Sox? He wasn't a great person to be saying it, but someone else was saying this. And we kind of ignored it, Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah.
Another guy from the Astros. And you go, okay, now these are two outsiders that have come in and said, these are the ways that we can win. And because Keuchel was bad, we kind of go, you know what, take your teach us how to win and get us, you know, get out of here stuff.
Why is it the White Sox, more than others, have to have the truth-telling come from outsiders? Because if you remember, it took Jimmy Rollins to ask what the hell Drake LaRoche was doing there.
Why is this child in our clubhouse all the time?
Someone else, I don't remember off the top of my head who it was.
Todd Frazier, I think.
It might have been, yeah. It might have been Todd. I'm going to go check on him. That listening to people who aren't of this and from this say, whoa, hey, maybe.
Maybe we could do some. Here are some things that I was doing in another place and we were successful. Perhaps we should add that to what we do here. That's an idea. What do you think? Huh?
That's what I mean about when he mentioned talking to each other about baseball, about that kind of communication. It doesn't have to be formal. It isn't just, here's what you got to download for this upcoming series. Here's your Codify stuff. Here's everything you need. A lot of this is lore. A lot of this is shared, and the way players' information can resonate and matter sometimes is players talking to players, and it's not a coach wagging a finger and saying, you do this, or I wrote this down, and this is what we're doing. It's little things. It's softer, but it can matter just as much.
Most of the time when we are talking about the concept of culture, even hearing it is like nails on a chalkboard sometimes. But I wonder, with what we see from the outside as being good culture with the White Sox clubhouse, guys who clearly like each other, they enjoy like each other as players, they appreciate each other's talent. Is enough of it drifting over into talking about and being about the game? I look at the White Sox starters, for example. I think there is some of that there, where it's not just for show. It's guys trading information. It's Michael Kopech learning something from Dylan Cease.
I was watching the Orioles do it because we were sitting right by the on-deck circle, and I was watching and hearing it last night. Anytime a guy struck out, there was a conversation that was happening with the next guy coming up. And that guy wasn't busy throwing his helmet or doing something else.
It's brief. They just walk by each other.
But they walk by and they say a couple things. And it might just be that two-seamer's nasty, or he's giving him the out, like something the umpire might be doing. But that connects. When people talk about hitting is contagious, which is really just garbage, and it's really not. But those are moments when a previous experience can inform the next guy's experience and make him more likely to succeed.
I don't know that the White Sox aren't doing this, and I want to be very clear about that.
And I only saw it because I was sitting close to the Orioles on deck circle.
I just wonder if what we think from looking at it from the outside is great culture might just be a bunch of guys who do truly like each other, but aren't getting the most out of each other as baseball players. And can you do like this soft way of doing it? Can you turn things around by doing a little bit more? And we both know, we both covered Paul Konerko. He was one of those guys that was so hard on himself that it almost made it so that you couldn't enjoy him playing baseball because he wasn't always enjoying him playing baseball.
Talk to Gordon Beckham about that relationship that he had and how much he looked up to Paul Konerko, and how maybe to the downside, some of that torment rubbed off on him a little bit.
Well, here's what I look at like as far as the guy that I think does do it that way. I think that over the last three seasons, Jose Abreu has been softened by these like young and loud and colorful and talented players. And I think it's been a positive for him. I'm wondering if in softening him, if those guys needed to look at what he does and add a little sandpaper to who they are, where maybe they looked at it as, oh, we're going to get him to loosen up. Maybe as you were getting him to loosen up, you should have been tightening up. And I just, it's one of those things I wonder about, because he seemed to embrace like stupid stuff where 3 years ago you started to see him like run to the dugout after they got the third out. You know, that sort of thing where he was having fun because he had gone through so much terrible White Sox baseball. But I wonder if as he was like, okay, you guys are right. You guys are right. I take this too seriously. You're right. I'm going to loosen up. I wonder if they were just like, well, now it's party time. And they weren't taking the example of, you should add a little something of Jose's game to yours and find the equilibrium of it.
That's Lawrence Holmes. I'm Dan Bernstein. We will get an expert on the White Sox organization to join us next. Up and down, maybe look at what resources they might have to expend if they're going to try to improve this and get to the win total that they need. Jim Margulis of Sox Machine will join us next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.